Why are women more likely to file for divorce? Author Una Metz joins Women Winning Divorce to unpack the research behind this growing trend and why choosing peace over persistence isn't failure, it's clarity.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, I sat down with Una Metz, author of a powerful Time article examining why women initiate divorce at higher rates than men. We discussed emotional labor, financial independence, repeated unmet needs, and why divorce is often a carefully considered decision, not a sudden one. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Una Metz joins us. Una is a Boston-based psychotherapist who specializes in working with women navigating divorce. She is the author of the newly released book, Unhitched, The Essential Divorce Guide for Women, which came out just last month. In Unhitched, Una explores the emotional realities behind why women initiate divorce at significantly higher rates than men. From the invisible burden of emotional labor to long-term imbalance, burnout, and the quiet erosion of partnership. Many of you may have seen her recent Time article on this topic, which is actually an excerpt from her book. Today, we're diving deeper into the themes she unpacks in Unhitched and why this conversation is so important for women considering or navigating divorce. Today, Una and I will be discussing why women are more likely to initiate divorce and what the data reveals, how emotional labor and invisible responsibilities impact marital satisfaction, why divorce is often the final step after years of trying to repair the relationship, how financial independence has shifted women's ability to make different choices, and why divorce should be reframed as a thoughtful decision, not a personal failure. Welcome, Una.
Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I am too, and it's going to be great. We have a lot to talk about that
is
so important and stuff that, of course, I'm really fascinated about, and I think most of our listeners are as well. So, Una, would you just share a little bit about yourself and background and kind of what got you to where you wrote this book and thus the article for our listeners?
Great. So I've been a therapist, as you said, in Boston for the past 30 years. And once I graduated with my degree, I then went on to a 5-year-long certificate program in group therapy. So I had always been running groups for women. And then about 17 years ago, I went through my own divorce. And I thought to myself, gosh, I'd really like to join a support group for myself, because I want to just talk to other people about the experience. And there was no support group that I could find. And so this little seed got planted in my mind. And I thought, you know, I already am well-trained in running groups. I know how to run groups. I'm a therapist. Maybe when I heal enough from my divorce, I'll start a group. So I started about 15 years ago. I started a divorce support group for women, and it filled up so quickly. I started 2 more, and all 3 of those groups now have been running at the exact same time, same day, for 15 years continuously, every single week. So wow. Women come in, they use them for as long as I say the contract is you use them for as long as it's helpful to you. Sometimes that's 6 months. Sometimes it's 3 years, right?
Right.
Depending on how long their divorce lasts. And then when they leave, it creates an opening for a new person to come. So I've literally seen hundreds and hundreds of women through the divorce process in my practice. And I finally got to the point where I felt like I had so much useful information to share that I really needed to write it all down. That's how the idea came to write the book. And the book is really about the emotional journey of divorce. So it's not a legal book. It's not a financial book. It's really about, like, what are all the emotions that you're going to go through from day one through all the way through the whole divorce and post into, you know, dating, post-divorce dating, or so I really cover it from the very beginning to through the very end.
Well, and that is, that's great because there needs to be more resources out there for sure. Now, let's talk about what did you discover in your research about why women are more likely to initiate divorce?
So there's this research out there that shows that in heterosexual divorces, it's the woman 70% of the time that initiates divorce. And, you know, I think there are some people out there who mostly I have found men on the internet who say, well, women, you know, they just leave their marriage because they can never be satisfied. You know, their expectations are too high. Or the other great one that they say is they leave because they get all the money, which we know is not true.
We know it's not so true. It's what we're wishing for, but it doesn't always happen.
Right. And so I really have been thinking a lot about this and writing a lot about this. And I can tell you from what the research shows, and we can also talk about what I've just seen in my practice, but I think what the research shows is that women have made incredible gains, and we're not caught up yet, but we've made incredible gains in terms of our own finances and careers. And I think, you know, that in the last few decades, you know, our progress has gone like this. And I think that for the most part, of course, not all men, but many men have not made the same kind of progress in terms of pitching in with parenting, doing an equal or equitable share of parenting, of emotional labor, of invisible labor, of household chores. And so it really leaves an even greater inequality in the home where, you know, women are doing more than men in parenting and chores, whether they're earning more or not. Like, even if they're, you know, sometimes people will say, well, he's earning all the money, so she should be doing more in the home. But guess what? The research shows that even if she's earning more, she's still doing more. And that's what I've seen in my practice all the time.
Well, and it's the reality is it's really too much for one person.
Yes.
Even if it's, you know, even if you are like more of a traditional, not working outside the home, that job is too much for one person.
Yes. And it's become much more. I mean, I think, you know, when I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm assuming we're in the same age range, even though my hair is more gray than yours. But I think when we were growing up, right, our parents might be like, okay, go out and play and we'll see you later. We didn't, you know, when we were growing up, we weren't, you know, being shuffled here and there to all of our violin lessons and our hockey practice and our SAT tutors and our this. I mean, parenting has become much more intense, I think, right? Yeah. And we're spending a lot more time parenting now than we did in the 70s and the 80s, right? And so you're right. It is too much for just one person to do.
Now, your article highlights that women are far more likely to file. And I would love, from your perspective, what's really driving that pattern?
Well, I think part of it is the inequality. One of the things that I see in my practice a lot here in Boston, and in Boston, we have a very, you know, there's so many universities here. We have a very highly educated population. And one of the things that I have seen over and over again is highly competent women who are married to highly educated men, but there's a level of passivity in the men. And either they have long periods of unemployment or underemployment, even with their PhD or even with their high-tech jobs, there may be times where they really are underemployed or unemployed, but they're not picking up the slack at home. Women are trying and trying and trying to improve the marriage, to drag their husbands to couples counseling. And they finally get to the point where they feel like they have no other option, right? Like they have tried everything. And so, yes, I think women do initiate more. And oftentimes what I find is that they're initiating a divorce because the marriage is dead, right?
Right.
They've been putting in the work to try and help things, and yet it's almost like they're riding a bicycle built for two uphill, and the husband's on the back, not pedaling, and, you know, dragging a cement block behind. And they feel like, I can't do it anymore. We have to make a change. We have to. And I love what you said in the beginning. It's not a failure. I want to get away from the marriage failed language. It's like, we need to make a change. We need to restructure in some way this family, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, many women describe years of carrying the majority of household responsibilities, parenting duties, and the emotional management within the marriage. And, you know, like you said, though, how, you know, that's usually a lot of what adds up to it. But how does that long-term imbalance slowly erode partnership, intimacy, and mutual respect?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because I think it really, when you're in a partnership where you're asking both directly and indirectly for your needs to be met, and you keep being responded to with, you know, fine, I'll do it, and then not doing it, right? This kind of nag complex that happens, or I don't want to do it, it's not my job, or, you know, this idea of weaponized incompetence, which is that I'm going to do it, but I'm not going to do a good job. So you're going to be so fed up that you just take it over, right? Like this idea of kind of the wife who sends her husband, she says, look, I've got too much on my plate. Can you just at least do the grocery shopping? And he says, okay, fine. Well, what do we need? And then she has to go make the whole list. And then he gets to the grocery store and he calls her four times to say, what kind of, you know, how many bananas do we need? Or am I supposed to get the lean beef or the, you know, not lean beef, you know, like, what am I supposed to do? And then he gets home and feels like a hero, right? And puts the groceries down on the kitchen table and goes off to do whatever he has to do. And then she's unpacking the groceries. And finally, it feels like, I should just do the grocery shopping myself, because this is not helpful. Right.
Okay.
And so I think that really begins to.
I got to interrupt you because I can't help thinking, okay, I've got a son, right? Is that where it starts? Like with the way the boys are being raised, and what we're seeing now is just this level of nobody ever required you to do anything. Maybe you never lived on your own. I don't know. What is it? Because that just doesn't, it's so frustrating. Just hearing you say that for these women, I know it's just crazy frustrating.
That's right. I think it absolutely has to start with parenting, right? Because we are our best role models for our children, right? And if they grow up in a house where they see, you know, the holiday comes and all the women are in the kitchen making sure that the food gets on the table and all the guys are watching the game, you know, that's what they learn, right? That's what they see as this is normal. This is, you know, this is what we should do. And so I think it does really start not only with our son, you know, parenting our sons, but also parenting our daughters.
Yeah. What are they going to put up with?
This is not okay. Right. And I think, you know, oftentimes it starts out in a marriage and there's a little bit of inequality and people can deal with that. But what I see is that a lot of times when kids are born, and it's not that it's the kid's fault, but when kids are born, the amount of work goes up so much, right? And then that's when this kind of the woman becomes the default parent. Oftentimes the cycle gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. And I think so what and you know, I think that can probably come from a lot of things. And I think that I remember this from probably like Oprah or Dr. Phil, right? Like really dating myself. But also there, you know, I feel as though we as women, we do need and we do have to communicate, right? I know we all think we shouldn't have to ask. He should know, but he doesn't. So we do have to communicate where they need to do it. And then, right, what do you think? In some ways, let them vacuum the house differently, right?
Yes.
Let them make dinner, even if it's not what you would make. You got to start somewhere, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if women are too controlling or want it done in exactly the right way, you know, mm-hmm. then we can also play into that dynamic of, well, it's fine, yeah. I'll just do it, right?
Right, right. Which is not and helpful.
I think, right. I think we don't have enough. I really advocate for people in long-term marriages, long-term relationships or marriages to have very regular check-ins, like every Sunday night. Like, how are we doing? How is it going? What's coming up this week? Who's mm-hmm. going to be home? Who's going to be making dinner? Who's, you know, and how are we feeling about what's happening in terms of our split? You know, are we being equitable here? You know?
Yeah. And that, and the thing is, and I think you are so right about that. We're not taught that. Like, so I'm glad one, we're having this conversation because, you know, a lot of times I feel like the things we talk about on this topic, right, are what's going on in divorce. But if you listen, it's like, but this can help you, keep you from going and getting divorced potentially.
Right.
If you can understand that we need to check, we need to talk and not only just like, hey, what's for dinner? What are the kids doing this week? But like, who's doing what and how are you handling whatever it is you've got to do?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it has to be regular. That has to be a regular conversation, right? That happens like to build it into your schedule.
Well, and that's what communication is, and not just like when you're at the point of exhaustion and then, and then so then your husband steps in and is like, oh, I'm the hero. But it's like, no, I need you to do this every day. I need you to do this every week. Right. Like this isn't just this one time. Yep. And I don't know. I find it really, you know, it's just in, throughout a lot of relationships and unless. You know, I think in some of the things that I've read or, you know, over time where it does really get to women who maybe they're not earning as much or they're working part time. So they have a belief and it may have been voiced and that it's all on them. Mm-hmm. So then that just feels so wrong because like we said, it's too much.
Right. Do you know about Eve Rodsky's fair play method?
Yes. She's been on the show.
Oh, she has. Good.
Talking about fair play. Yeah. I think it was the beginning of last year. Love that book. And it's so true. There's so many cards. Like,
Right.
There's
the invisible
so many
labor is so much. Right.
Yeah. And I was going to bring that up to you, which I knew you had certainly heard of it because it's really, it's the only way to do it. We got to divvy it up. Right.
Yes.
And we have to, and I do feel that way with kids. And he's like, you got to divide and conquer and we got to see who can do what.
Right.
And one thing also that I found that it's not certainly something I didn't know or believe maybe after my first child, but finally I got a point where I was like, I don't want to go to that birthday party. I've been to so many birthday parties.
Right.
I was like, it's your turn. I'm done.
I'm
done. I just don't want to go and sit there and talk to these women and watch these kids and be like, you know, wondering what my child's doing.
Right.
I don't want
to. At the bouncy house place or whatever, at the pony. Right.
Wherever you've got to go.
Yes.
Right. And
yes.
But they're still at that age where the parent needs to stay.
Yes. That's right. Right.
And I think allowing ourselves to be like, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm,
and that is okay. You're not a bad mom.
Absolutely. And that it's important for both parents to have that experience. We have to. And I think the key is starting early. And what I think some people criticize the fair play method and say it doesn't work. You know, you can whatever, bring the horse to water, but you can't make them drink. I mean, I think that once those patterns get established, it's very hard to change them. So I really encourage people to do it much earlier on and before you build up so much resentment, right?
I think that's the key because once you're at that point, how do you come back? Because you're so angry and it has been building and building, simmering.
Yep.
And what I, in my side of the practice with women, by the time they get to me, they're done. Mm-hmm.
They're done. Right.
They may not have voiced all of that to their husband. That's why their husband's always shocked because they're not really paying attention. And, but they're just done. They're like, I don't care. Even if you do change or do this, like, I'm just over it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's so it's important if you're not at the point of divorce yet to listen to this. And it's also important, this is important information for people going into a next relationship, because sometimes people, when they're getting divorced, they're like, I don't want another relationship at all. I do not want to pick up somebody's dirty socks ever again. Right.
And
if that's your case, that's okay. And if you want to be in another relationship, and lots of people do, then how can you structure it in a different way so you don't get to this point again? Right.
That is so important. And especially no matter what it is, like, I think you're right, in a relationship. And if you're going to have, you know, go into one, which you just never know, you don't want to repeat the same patterns, which we're going to be inclined to do.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the research, Heather, shows when a man and woman get married, women's household labor goes up by 7 hours a week and men's goes down by 1 hour a week. Right? Like, that's
why do we
not
let that happen, ladies? Right?
That's
why
not sustainable over time. Right.
It's not.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
It really isn't. And you know, I fascinating how we help women understand that.
Right. Right. And help men understand it too, right? Like, if it's a Saturday and you want to get intimate with your wife, like, it's going to be more effective for you to spend an hour vacuuming the house and doing a little grocery shopping than spending an hour driving out to a flower shop to get her a dozen roses, right?
Right.
What do women really want? They want to feel more relaxed. You know, it's not like, I mean, sure, getting a nice gift is nice too, but having something taken off their plate, feeling cared for, feeling like they're an equivalent partner, and having somebody take some of the work off of their plate, I think that's what turns women on, frankly. You know, there's those books of like women's porn, and it's like, it shows a guy like vacuuming, right?
Cooking dinner, right?
Doing the laundry. Like, honey, let me do this for you. Let me take this
off
of your plate.
It's also, I think you're right, because it's inviting men into understanding. But also, you're not doing it for me. You're doing it for us, right? Because it's like, we automatically are like, it's our job. No, it's not. It needs to be done for the household.
Exactly.
And that's the part of the fair play that I do like, because it's like, we each got to have our stuff, right? And and as long as we each know, hey, these are the things we're handling, then that does become more fair, not necessarily equal, but just more fair. And we feel like, hey, now we are in partnership.
Right, right.
Because I think that's such a road, right? Partnership. Right. It's eroded when you feel like I'm the housekeeper that has all these expectations that I have to do it all.
Right, right. And I think that's such an important point about what you're saying and what Eve Rodsky says about making it equitable, not equal. So she is not saying, like, you have to, each person has to vacuum every other time, or you have to make dinner three times a week and I make dinner three times a week, or you get the oil changed this week and or this whatever season and I get it changed next season.
Yeah.
She's saying, how can we be equitable? So how can we each have an equitable number of tasks that we're in charge of, not only, you know, and she says also the planning, the execution, and the communication about it, right? It's not enough to just schedule the dentist appointments. You need to take the child to the dentist also, and then schedule the follow-up, and then communicate what happened at the dentist, right?
Yeah, right. It's there's all of those things. Now, let's like pivot a little bit and talk about financial independence and how significantly, how that significantly changed the divorce landscape for women.
Yes, yes. And I think where we also really see that is in the gray divorce. You know, these divorces of women over 50 or over 65. You know, that is such a, you know, part of the population where divorce is rising so much. And I think that has a lot to do with financial independence. I think in the old days, you know, women needed men around to protect them and to provide for them. And I think women have so much more financial independence now. We can even get our own credit cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Unlike in the old days, right? In the old days, you couldn't get your own credit card. You couldn't take out your own mortgage. And now women can. And so If your husband is feeling more like an additional child in the house rather than a full partner, well, there's only so much, I think, that women can take of that.
Now, why, this is a little off like what we said we were going to talk about, but since you said it's rising so much, you know, the gray divorce, what does the research show or your theories from all of your practice experience? Why do you think that is at that particular age?
Right. Well, for one thing, we're living longer, right? And we're getting married later. So I think in the old days, if you were married for a long time and you reached 60, you might think, well, we only have another 10 years to go. It's okay. We can do it.
But now you reach,
But now you reach 60 and you're like, wait a second.
You know,
I think also, you know, we have been spending this intense time of parenting. We're in a season, you know, of very intense parenting time. And so I think oftentimes when the empty nest comes and people have been so focused on kids, on kids, on kids, right? And then they suddenly look at each other and they're like, wait a second, do we really have anything in common anymore?
Like, which is so sad because sometimes that's like a, they ignored that part.
For too long.
And
because
you're doing
partly
because
they were so busy with the kids.
Right.
So they didn't pay attention to. And then, you know, people have not connected these two dots, but I'm connecting these two dots. Okay. So one dot is gray divorce. The other dot is when there's an acute illness that happens, what the research shows is that if the man becomes acutely ill, the wife is likely to leave a long-term marriage 3% of the time. Not that much. 3% of the time.
Much. Okay.
If a woman becomes acutely ill, in a long-term marriage, a man is likely to leave 21% of the time. One out of five marriages will end if she gets cancer, if she has a stroke.
That's really, really sad.
Right?
It is sad.
Really, really sad.
So let's talk about, though, the emotional toll of staying in an unhappy marriage, because I think that's often maybe disregarded, underestimated. And what do you see? What have you found?
I mean, I think women are so socialized to keep the family together. They're so socialized to be so competent, to solve the problems, you know, in the household, to take care of the kids. And I think, you know, women are so, women and men both, but I think women, especially mothers, are so worried about their kids and they're worried about what's going to happen, how a divorce is going to impact their kids. And, you know, I think the old research in the 70s, the research said, well, divorce is bad for kids and that's it, right? Yeah. The new research really shows that what's bad for kids is conflict. And that's whether it's the kind of conflict where you're yelling and screaming and having fights all the time, or that kind of icy cold conflict where people are not really talking to each other. They're really shut down around each other. But that's not good for kids either. And so I think helping women see that, that yes, divorce is, it's not that divorce is good for kids. Kids are going to react to it and they're it's going to be a time of transition and it will be hard, just like any change is hard. But staying in an unhealthy marriage for the kids is not good either. And I think women, the women that I see, and I don't know if you found this in your practice, but the women I see, they've been thinking about divorce for a really long time before they actually do it. Because I think one of the hardest things to give up is the hope that it's going to get better.
Yes.
Right.
I agree with you. And that's one of the things that I think as women, you know, as the peacekeepers, generally speaking, and keeping the family together, we hold out hope, but we also have an unrealistic belief about what we have control over and that we can really impact that. And I think that it can happen. I think a lot of times you need a professional, a mental health, like to really help, because like we each come into these marriages with the communication styles that we grew up with, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And
that's right.
that's where you really need a professional to guide you both to determine, right, if if you can get through it. And
that's right.
I don't know. I've in our practice, I would say at least 50% have tried counseling. Mm-hmm. Not always does the partner agree, but then it's like, well, do it for yourself, right? Because then you understand more about the relationship you're in.
Absolutely.
Your part in it. And then it will help you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty rare that people, it happens, but it's pretty rare that somebody's married to like an absolute monster who's horrible 100% of the time. Right. And so, you know, it goes up. And I think that leads also to this thought of like, okay, well, maybe it could get like it was better, you know, or maybe if he just gets another job, maybe then it will be better. Maybe when we move, it will be better. Maybe if I could, you know, cook more, it would be better. So I think people sometimes get in lulled into that idea that if only we try a little bit harder. And I think part of the work, you know, in an unhealthy marriage is really recognizing, is this going to get better? Do both parties agree on what the problem is? Because if you don't even have agreement on what the problem is, it's going to be really hard to fix that problem. And if you agree on what the problem is, do you have buy-in from both people, like motivation from both people?
Yeah.
Right?
That is,
or
you know,
not.
I've never, I mean, I've probably heard it or thought it, but like that was just great. Like if we don't even agree on what the problem is, we really have a lot of work to do, because like that is the first step, figuring out what the problem is.
Right. If the problem is we don't communicate enough about what our needs are and we're both responsible for that, that's something that can be solved, right? You can go to a marital counselor and help to really communicate about what your needs are. But if the problem is somebody's unfaithful, right, there's infidelity, but they're not willing to address that, that's a different story. Or if somebody is a workaholic and they say, well, but I have to work 80 hours a week. There's no other possibility. And if this is your problem, if you want me to be home more, that's not workable. You have to decide, like, am I going to accept the status quo? Or are we going to make a change to our marriage?
Now, divorce is still commonly framed as a failure, especially for women. So why is it so important to reframe divorce as a thoughtful decision rooted, you know, in health, stability, and personal growth?
I love that question. And I love talking about this because I feel like one of my passions is to reduce the shame and stigma of divorce. Yeah. You know, we still have this, we still go by this thing that when people get married, it's till death do us part, right? And everybody who stands at the altar says, I know that 50% of marriages end in divorce, but not ours. Ours isn't going to, right? And so we haven't like faced the reality that sometimes, oftentimes, marriages do end, right? And it's so weird because it's the only institution that we have where we expect that it's going to last forever. Like you would never say to a 25-year-old, okay, you're going to find a job and you're going to be at that job till death do you part. And if you leave that job for a different job, that's a failure on your part, right? And at 25, you're going to get an apartment. And if you leave that apartment, if you want to move to a different city, or if you want to get a bigger home, that's a failure on your part because you should be in that apartment till death do you part. Like there's no other thing that we do in life where we expect that it's going to, that at 25, you're going to make a decision that still works for you at 85, right?
Right.
So I think sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. And it's not a failure if it doesn't work. It just means that you need to do something different. You need to make a change.
Yeah. And
it doesn't mean it's not sad. It's still going to be sad and heartbreaking if it doesn't work. But it doesn't mean it's a failure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so many factors go into it, right? Because like when you're first getting married, like, what do you know, right? You just know what you've grown up with. And, and I really think everybody's doing the best that they can and they're trying. But like sometimes there are just monumental things that just can't be overcome.
That's right.
And it's not for really, I think, you know, both individuals trying or maybe not trying. Maybe they're like you said, the one workaholic, like that, I'm just going to do that. Like that is who I am. And if that, if I have to change that in order to stay, like that's just not going to happen.
Right.
But that's I mean, how do you, what would you say to, you know, the women who are listening who feel guilty for even questioning their marriage? What would you want her to know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I want to say is I think there's still some judgment from outside and nobody is living in your marriage, right? Nobody is living your life day to day to day. And you don't have to wait until it gets to the point where you are suffering so immensely that then you have to leave. Like, you don't have to wait until it gets absolutely the worst it's ever been. People are allowed to leave and make changes when it's not working for them. And it can be better on the other side. You know, I've seen that a lot in my practice where women, even if they think it's the worst thing that's ever happened to them when they first start out, oftentimes it turns out to be the best decision they ever made, you know, on the other side. It takes a lot of work to do the work of grieving, but I think it can really be better on the other side. So I would just say, don't go it alone. Make sure you have support in your journey. And know that for many people, it does get better on the other side.
Yes, I think you're right. I 100% do, because, you know, we're in a relationship that's just not working. You know, you're not showing up as your best as, you know, as a mother, as a daughter, as a sibling, as a friend. Right? It really, it affects you in so many ways that I've found many women don't appreciate that, right, when they're in it. And then, like, through the divorce, there's the separation, right? And they're no longer living together. And all of a sudden, a couple months of that, they're like, man, I feel great. Like, I have so much more peace.
And I'm so much of a better parent.
Right?
Which they never imagined. They're like, I can't do this on my own. But once they get that freedom from being out of the unhealthy marriage, they feel so much better and stronger, and they're able to parent in the way that they want to parent. And so they feel like their kids are doing better, they're doing better. The other thing I would say is, the thing I've seen a lot is that if women are in unhealthy marriages, oftentimes if they do not pay attention and make a change, it comes out in their body. All of a sudden, they develop heart problems. They get an autoimmune disorder. They fall and break something. There's some, they get heart palpitations. They get migraines. Like, there's some way where their body is like, hey, you're not listening. Knock, knock, knock. You're still not listening. Okay. Knock, 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 knock. I'm going to have to tell you with your body that you need to make a change.
I appreciate you said that, because I firmly believe that, right? Like, you can only take so much in your body. I tell my daughters that they're in college, right? One's in med school, one's in college. And, you know, when they get sick, I'm like, it's time to slow down. Or they come home and all of a sudden now they're sick. It's like, because you need to rest. And yes, you do need me to take care of you, but that's the only way is if your body's like, okay, I'm going to make you lay in that bed. And I do believe that. I think our bodies are amazing, but that can, you know, we can feel like under attack sometimes, but it's like, you know, not everything is aligned, body, mind, and spirit and your heart. And in that, it does erode away at people, these difficult relationships.
And
that
really
stress, right? That stress that you're not communicating to, you're just holding it all in. And it does. It makes you sick.
It absolutely does. I've seen it so many times, and I've seen so many of those problems resolve once women get divorced, which is, you know, it's
amazing. Sad that it got to that point, but I think it brings home the fact that, guys, like, this is not good. If you're sick, what good are you to anybody? And it's just, you know, it's not, it's not one healthy, and it just shows that the relationship isn't sustainable. In the way it is, in the way you're living in it now,
There has to be a change.
Well, I can't even believe we're almost at the end, but our show is called Women Winning Divorce. And I would love to know, what does winning at life mean to you?
I think winning at life really is about knowing what it is that you want and need in life, and then being able to put that into practice. And that doesn't mean that you're a selfish person who doesn't think about other people's needs. Mm-hmm. You, as women, we always think about other people's needs, right? So I'm not worried that you're going to stop thinking about other people's needs, but you can also think about your own needs and your own wants and make those things come true. So that's, to me, would be winning.
I love it. Now, lastly, where can our listeners find more about you, your work, the article, mm-hmm. your book, all the many things you've got going on?
Oh, great. Yes, yes. Well, if you want to learn more about the emotional journey of divorce, I encourage you to pick up my book on Amazon. It's Unhitched, The Essential Divorce Guide for Women. And it comes in audiobook, too. So if you're listening right now and you don't want to have this book on your bedstand or on your nightstand.
True.
Or in your car when you're picking up your kids, you can just listen. And I also have a website that has a lot of free resources on it. It's got all the podcasts I've been on, all the articles I've written. It's unametz.com. That's unametz.com. And you can find all the free resources you need there. I also have a list of books, great books like great divorce memoirs and great books about infidelity. I have books about children's books for divorce, all kinds of resources and recommendations. So feel free to check me out there. And you can also give me a follow on Instagram or LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Well, we'll make sure all of those are in our show notes so that it's very easy for everyone to follow. And we have reached the end of our show today. Thank you so much, Una, for joining us and for bringing thoughtful research and clarity to such an important conversation. Your work helps women feel seen and understood and reminds them that divorce is rarely impulsive, but often the result of deep reflection and unmet needs over time. For our listeners, if this conversation resonated with you, be sure to listen to our mini episode number 68, How Emotional Labor Drove Thousands of Women to Choose Divorce, where we dive even deeper into this topic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure having this conversation today.
Well, it's great. Thank you.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.